Hey there. I offer this podcast freely. Your support really makes a difference. To make a donation, visit reneemckenna.com. Welcome to Spiritual Psychology. My name is Renee LaValle McKenna, and I bring my 30 plus years as a recovering addict and ex-crazy person turned therapist and shamanic healer to bring you snackable teachings on spirituality, psychology, and all things personal growth. And today I want to talk about releasing and receiving. And releasing and receiving are kind of like the breathing out and breathing in of the life flow in all areas of our life. We eat food. We need to receive the nutrients it offers to us and excrete what our body doesn't need. In breathing, every moment we receive vital oxygen goes to every cell in our body. And when we breathe out, we're releasing waste products and carbon dioxide that actually serves the plant world in our ecosystems. Every time we breathe, we are participating in the larger life system, whether we're aware of it or not. And so releasing and receiving are both important and healthy aspects of this life flow. But when we start to move into the more intentional areas of our life, relationships, clothing, old belief structures, or patterned ways of doing things, most of us are challenged in one way or another in opening to receive or in letting go what no longer serves us. And they are inseparable. If my lungs are full and I won't let go of the gases in my lungs, then I can't breathe in fresh new air. So we have to breathe out in order to be able to breathe in. I remember one time, in fact, the only time I ever went whitewater rafting, went with a whole bunch of friends. It was supposed to be this amazing experience. It was gorgeous where we went up in New Hampshire, and we put on helmets and life jackets, and they give us all this training of what to do if you get knocked out of the boat and fall in the water, which mostly consisted of look for your toes, get your toes up above the waterline, and just allow the water to take you and float. And the reason you do that is because there's lots of rocks and undertows, and you don't want to get sucked under or get whacked by the rocks that might break or bruise one of your legs or feet. They have all these crazy names for the different parts of the river, and we went through the Three Sisters of Doom or some terrible thing. And the boat folded in half, and three of us went out. Me, of course, being one of them. And one of my only deep primal fears in life is drowning. Although I can't say I got afraid at the time. My first thought when I went in the water was, this is not happening. This is not happening. This is not happening. Denial always being my first line of defense, I think. And then I looked for my toes and I kept getting sucked under the water, sucked under the water, sucked under the water. And I could see my boat moving further away with my friends all with their arms outreached toward me. And I was just trying to breathe. And every time I got sucked under and came back up, I would try to take another in-breath, but my lungs were already full. And it was too scary to breathe out. I was afraid if I breathed out that I wouldn't be able to breathe in again. And so I was just gasping, trying to make my lungs take in more, but they were already fully inflated. It all turned out fine. My body floated out of the rapids and into a calmer spot, and another boat pulled me in. Mine was kind of the most dramatic rescue, so I get the most attention, which of course I loved, because I love attention. At least that kind of attention, where I can be kind of a hero. Oh, it was nothing. And certainly I did survive. So it was a really interesting experience internally because I got enough care and positive accolades for the great job that I did that I was able to overcome it for the weekend. Although I don't think I got back in the boat. I guess we just made one run down the river. Anyway, the next year they were going to do the same trip again. No fucking way. Are you kidding me? One strike, you're out for me. Never going whitewater rafting again. That was enough. But if I had been able to trust that breathing out would actually allow me to receive more oxygen, it probably would have been a more manageable, less panicked experience. And that's a lesson on all areas of our life. Most of us are terrified to let go because we're terrified that there will be nothing else coming back to us. I've had a lot of hoarders and clutterers in my life, coming from some pretty serious hoarding on my father's side of the family. The last place my grandmother lived was packed floor to ceiling with labeled boxes. There was a tiny place at the kitchen table for grandma and grandpa to eat. The rest of it was overflowed with paperwork, and there were little corridors between all of the boxes where they could walk. The woman had more cleaning products in her bathroom than you could ever see, and I have to tell you, the bathroom was not clean. When I had the privilege of cleaning out that apartment after my grandmother passed, there were boxes of lids of disposable plastic containers. There were two boxes taped and labeled expired coupons. Why do you keep expired coupons, Grandma? Because you're a little crazy. Terrified to let go. She grew up one of 10 children, very poor, on a farm in Quebec, province of Canada. And she birthed 5 children in the Depression and World War II. So you can't really blame her. She had some circumstantial experiences of lack that obviously deeply scarred her. And although I still tend to be a stuff magnet, as far as the material world goes, I'm uber experienced at letting go and receiving. Last year, in one weekend, I emptied out pretty much every item of a 4-bedroom house. I had a rummage sale, and then a big giant truck came and took away the rest on Monday, and I moved to New York. Gathered a whole bunch of new stuff. Here we go. We'll probably have to do that again in the next few years. There's always more stuff. I'm on probably my 8th set of stuff in my adult life. And I was introduced long ago to the principle of making room for God. And that letting go of things, people, relationships, jobs, circumstances, and old ways of being and doing makes room for new growth, regeneration, and healthy evolution. But if my garden is packed with weeds, then there's no place to grow healthy vegetables. I gotta pull the weeds, till the soil, if I want to cultivate new, nourishing life forms in my life. So I had this client, Ray, who called himself a compulsive clutterer. And he was actually a really creative artist, but he was also what I've come to know as an under-earner, which is someone who's kind of unconsciously attached to a poverty mentality and earns much less than they're capable or worth. And his house was so filled with art supplies and potential projects that there was almost no place to sit. He didn't invite people over to the house anymore because he was ashamed of how it looked, and he wasn't actually able to create the kind of art that really brought him joy. And he came to me because of depression, and he'd tried many rounds of psychedelics, ketamine, all the standard Western antidepressants, and none of it had much effect. And he had this idea that once he managed his depression, then he'd be able to clear and organize his house and make art. And it was clear to me that it was the reverse process that was needed, that he needed to be willing to let go of all these things that were cluttering up and depressing his life energy, and then the flow would start. But he was terrified to let go of his stuff. He had fear of regret. As soon as I give it away, I'll know I'll need it. Fear of loss and grief, because his house wasn't filled with junk. It was filled with beautiful, hand-picked items that would actually make beautiful creative art projects. Some of them were quite valuable, but energetically, they were junk. It was like having a creative bowel obstruction. He was all inflow and no outflow. And his inner self-criticism was almost unbearable with all the things he should do, how he should be, what was wrong with him. He toyed with the idea of suicide. And there is often this strange and painful irony that the things that we are most attached to can be the things that block us from our deeper heart's desire. And it is only when we are willing to let those things go that the life force can flow through us. And Ray's a person who loves beauty. The artwork that he has created is stunningly handcrafted, gorgeous pieces. And he was surrounded by clutter, ugliness, and actually an accumulation of filth in his house. And that, from my perspective, was the root of his depression. I think it's very unwise that Western psychology looks at depression as a physical condition. Many people believe if they can just find the right psych meds and get their neurotransmitters in order, then the depression will go away. And depression, for me, is pressing down of the truth, holding the life force at bay, for fear that we will be brought places that we don't want to go. In my experience, there are always circumstantial situations in any indication of depression. In fact, for me, that is what the information of depression is about. But something is out of alignment and being depressed. And when we looked deeper, it raised attachment to these physical objects. It became clear that his experience as a child with a family where everything looked okay, but mom was having an affair with another man, and the marriage was falling apart. And Ray had discovered his mother's affair through a series of events when he was about 8 years old. And he kept that secret, and the family kept that secret for years. And deep inside, Ray knew that he was living in a lie and that the people that were caregiving him were untrustworthy. And he turned his attention to objects in the material world because objects don't lie and they don't betray you. And there is life force in all things. And some people feel the life force in animals, others in plants, some in surfing, little children. And there are many people I have worked with who can feel the life force in objects, natural objects and objects owned by other people. They can feel the personality, the little life force of a china cup, of a seashell, of a piece of furniture. It's like a conversation with the physical world. And Ray had this very deeply, which also made his art quite alive and interesting. But he was stuck in all these dysfunctional relationships with the thousands of objects in his house that at some point had brought him security and had now created a prison. And rather than being a source of joy and security and comfort, these objects had created a very low resonance of chaos, shame, disorder in his space. They had overtaken his life. You know, it's very interesting. In contemplating the Ten Commandments, one of the commandments is, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." Whatever the Most High or the life force is, when we surrender to it, things open, flow in ways we couldn't have imagined. But many of us, perhaps even most of us, put many gods before the God of the universe, of the life force, of source. We might put our relationship, our work, money, our children, our relationship with drugs, alcohol, food, shopping, or collections of material items. And when we seek to source our life flow through these lesser forms, then the life force doesn't flow and gets clogged, and we can become depressed or anxious. And the good news is, if we can find the courage to let go of these false gods of what no longer serves us, my observation is nearly miraculous things will start to happen. And if we cling to those false gods, they will bring us down and perhaps even destroy us. And this is what was happening with Ray. In my experiences, we often have to do the hard or scary thing, sometimes to do the thing that we're most afraid of, in order to actually get our deepest heart's desire. We need to be willing to truly and deeply let go of the things we believe are feeding or sustaining us in order to be truly, deeply nourished and fulfilled. And Ray is still in process, still comes to see me occasionally, still seeking the right combination of some kind of meds to heal his depression so he'll have the energy to go through his stuff. And unfortunately, it's like many people who try to prepare themselves and become healthy before they start dating or get in relationship. We often only learn how to swim by getting in the water. And if we want to be free, we need to free ourselves of the things that bind us. We don't get free first and then get rid of the stuff. We got to get rid of the stuff in order to become free. And so what are you called to release or let go of in your life? We all have stuff we're attached to, and it doesn't mean it will necessarily go away forever. Part of the irony in my own experience is many times it is when I actually truly deeply let go that the very thing I've been clawing after returns to me of its own accord. But you can't fake it and you can't trick it. And I believe our deepest purpose here is to grow on a soul level in experience of the connection, love, and care of the larger consciousness system of which we're a part, that most of us feel separate from and don't trust. So scan through your life. Look at where you're attached to people, places, things, power, circumstances, how others see you, And where are those things keeping you stuck? And what needs to be released so that you can receive what you really deeply need? Thank you so much for listening. I'm doing a workshop on ancestral healing Saturday, November 18th, 2023, from 12 to 4 Eastern, 9 to 1 Pacific. I invite you to join me as we explore ancestral ways of knowing, intergenerational trauma, how to heal, how to separate, and how to connect in healthy ways with those who have gone before us. There's a link in the show notes to sign up. It's developing into a really wonderful group. It'll be a lot of interaction. I can personally guide you through this very rich and fascinating perspective on ourselves and our family lines. And because a lot of this work will be with our inner ways of knowing rather than practical information, people who are adopted or have been otherwise separated from their biological family are really encouraged to come. Again, the veil between the worlds is thin, and we have access to much more information than we may be consciously aware of. So please join me for Ancestral Healing, Saturday, November 18th. Can't wait to meet some of you in person, or virtually in person anyway. If you'd like to work on your own intergenerational trauma or see how a block of spiritual psychology work might benefit you in your life, shoot me an email, info@reneemckenna.com. We'll set up a free discovery call. Also, be sure to check me out on YouTube, doing really interesting and informative discussions with all kinds of practitioners in the body, mind, spirit, energy world. New videos coming out every week on my spiritual psychology YouTube channel. Thanks as always to my supporters on Patreon and through this podcast. Blessings on your path until we meet again. This is Renee LaValle McKenna for Spiritual Psychology.